Hi, Larry Gassman along with Walden Hughes, and today we're talking with Charlie Reinhart, who has written a book about the life of James Stewart. And first of all, Charlie, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, it's a real pleasure.
You know, I guess I need to ask the question. I don't know how many books have been written about James Stewart, but I know I could probably count them on one hand, I think. So my question is, why another book? What did you see or find that you said, oh, gee, so this hasn't been covered, and let's cover it?
Well, actually, the inspiration for the book actually came from my wife.
Uh-huh.
She has been a Jimmy Stewart fan for years, and she listened to the Six Shooter series,
mm-hmm.
and she gave it to me. She said, you got to listen to these. These are great shows. And I listened, and I've written other books. My first love are the Beatles,
uh-huh.
and I've written a couple books on the Beatles. And as I listened to these Six Shooters, I thought to myself, you know, this would probably make a pretty good book if I can find enough radio shows. So I started searching different places, finding shows, and boy, within a month, I had found over 300 radio shows
sure.
that Jimmy Stewart was on,
mm-hmm.
and we just kept the search going, and finally I went to her, in fact, on our wedding anniversary, and I said, you know, we're going to do a book on Jimmy Stewart's radio career. And she said, no, there's not enough information. And I said, well, I already have 120 pages written. So that's how the whole thing got started.
Isn't it amazing when you go back and you look at his radio career? He was already really well known for what he had done in movies. But he was such a natural. I think that if he had not done movies, he could have easily done and had a really, really good radio career because he was so spontaneous, so relaxed, so believable.
Oh, yeah. His radio, actually, you know, he started doing radio very early on as part of his duties, I guess, with the studio. He was doing the Good News in 1938 and 39.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a lot of the MGM people on, and that's really where he got started. He hosted that show quite a few times and was pretty good at it. Not a lot of them still exist.
Right, right.
But I wish they were all around, but unfortunately they're not.
You know, I know he still had a love for radio into the 90s.
Yeah.
Because I did him do the Campbell Soup commercial. He did a Thanksgiving special for Disney
yep.
on the radio. Yep. He kept doing it. He was really good at it.
Yeah, he did a couple of those specials, the Thanksgiving special. I believe, if I remember right, it's been a while since I've looked through the book myself, but I believe that might have been his last radio show, the Thanksgiving special. His voice was beginning to go at that point.
Yeah.
His voice was a little weak, but he made it through the show.
What do you suppose it was in that era where many movie stars were petrified of radio? What was it about him that seemingly made him just so relaxed and so believable?
Well, we live very close to the Jimmy Stewart Museum, and we're up there quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had the chance to sit down and talk to his daughters. And they both comment on the fact that that's the way he was around the house. He was just so relaxed. You know, everything he did was very, very relaxed. And I don't think the microphone made one bit of difference to him at all.
Was he as laid back as he was on his Six Shooter shows?
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep, the daughters say that's the way he was. You know, he around the house with the pets, with Gloria, with them, you know, and with her brothers. That's the way he was all the time.
You know, I was just thinking, I have an audio book of him reading his poems. And I think most
yes.
everybody knows the one about his dog.
Yeah.
The one he did on Johnny. And him and audio just fit so well. And they just, I think Larry right. He could have made a whole career just in radio alone.
Oh, no question. You know, we went to the Library of Congress to listen to some of the shows that were only available there. And when we went in, you go through an orientation, And the gentleman that was doing our orientation, I would say, was probably in his mid-80s. And he said, "What are you doing here today?" And I said, "Well, we're doing some research on Jimmy Stewart's radio career." And he said, "I didn't know he had one."
Oh, my gosh.
You know, here's a guy who lived through that era, and he at least claimed that day that he didn't even know Jimmy Stewart was on the radio.
Wow. Wow.
I remember when he sat down with Larry King on the radio in 86, that was some of the questions from the audience was about the six shooter. And you could tell Jimmy really loved that series.
Oh, he did. He loved the series, yes. No doubt about it. And I think he probably would have done it longer had it not been for the cigarette commercial. The cigarettes were going to pick up the show, and he just didn't want to deal with the cigarettes.
So that is true. He nixed it because of his aversion to cigarettes.
Well, you know, I don't have any firsthand evidence of that, but that's what everybody says. That's what the daughters say they remember, too, so have to believe it's true.
Do you know, in the research that you did he have a favorite show of all of the programs he did throughout his career?
Oh, boy. No, I don't think I ever ran into anything like that. I know he did Lux Radio Theater quite a few times. He did Bing Crosby a lot. I think he enjoyed those shows. If you just listen to him, you know, he just sounds like he's having fun when he was on Bing Crosby. But they were the two shows he did the most, so I have to think something about them he liked.
It's interesting, too, because he was, primarily on radio at least, was a dramatic actor. But he still sounded so much at home, even when he did the Jack Benny program in 1949. It's amazing. I don't think I ever heard him sound out of character or bad during a radio show.
No. He was always spot on, and of course he was so easy to tell. I guess most of the writers knew how he was going to react, how he was going to speak, and I guess the scripts were probably written that way for him.
I still tear up many times listening to the Lux version of It's a Wonderful Life. It's just, I know most people are so fond of the movie, but it works so well as a radio play. And he handled that so well. And that will be 70 years next year. But it's just something else he could do.
Yeah, and you know, he did that. He did It's a Wonderful Life so many times on the radio. And unfortunately, the majority of them are not available.
Right.
It's a great thing that the Lux show is. He also did it once for a show called Stars in the Air.
Yes.
He did that in 1951. And that was a show at the time we wrote the book. That show apparently did not exist, but I can tell you we found a copy of it. I got a copy of it from a gentleman in Australia, of all places, who had the book and wrote to me and said, "I have this show." And, you know, we not only have the book, but I have a blog. I daily post more information about all the shows on, and that show will be coming up, I think, on December the 13th. That's going to be posted, so people will be able to get a listen to Jimmy doing Stars in the Air and It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, that's a great show. That's a terrific show.
It is, yeah.
Now, I don't remember hearing it. Can't remember. But, I mean, how did they deal with the fact that even on Lux, it was an hour adaptation, and Stars in the Air, my memory is that it was 30 minutes. 30. So how did that happen? How'd they do that?
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, they get the main points across, and that's about it.
And I guess...
You know he's in trouble, and that's about, you know, you don't get the whole story, but you get enough of it to know what's going on.
And by that time, most people probably had heard it or seen it so many times that they didn't need to come into it with a feeling of, "I don't think I've ever heard this show before." They knew the show, so it probably worked better than it would have.
By that time, I think probably most people could have spoken right along with them, been on so many times.
For our audience, Charlie, where can they find your blog, and what's the actual title of the book? If we're talking, they might as well...
The blog is just called Jimmy Stewart on the Air, no spaces, .com. It's been up now for a little more than a year, and I have enough entries to go. It's probably going to end in mid-February of next year. I'm going to come to the end of things.
I was up there a few days ago, and I was surprised to see our names up there. I didn't even know that they were up there.
Yeah.
I was just looking for supplemental material to talk about when we did this show. So.
Yeah, and I was more than pleasantly surprised. Well, I mean, when I started that, I figured how many people are going to come look at this, but at least there'll be something up there for people who do want to see it. And my gosh, I think we're up to about 330-some thousand hits.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
And what's the title of the book, and where can they go get it?
Well, the title is same as the blog, Jimmy Stewart on the Air. And it's Bear Manor Media who published it. But you can get it just about anywhere. Amazon has it. I've seen copies on eBay. So, it's out there, a lot of different places.
When you wrote the book, did you have access to all of the material from his family?
No. We did have access to what the museum had, mm-hmm. which was not a lot. They now have a whole lot more because we donate almost everything that we find to the museum. Mm-hmm. So they have any radio show that I had, they now have. And they're building up a pretty good collection. The museum's doing pretty well. They weren't a few years ago. I know you might have seen the news. They went on TV and said, we might have to close down. Mm-hmm. We don't have money. Yeah. Well, they found a benefactor, and they're doing real well now.
Good.
I think maybe we should talk about the museum. I remember having the curator on about 15 years ago. It's in Jimmy's actual hometown, right, Charlie?
It's in Indiana, Pennsylvania. It's in the library in Indiana. One of the things he specified when they told him that they were going to do a museum, he said, don't build anything. Put it someplace that's already there. So it's on the third floor of the town library. It's about five rooms, actually. There's a smaller room there also, and it's pretty much chronological. If you follow the path around and you go from his early childhood days right up to the day he died, they have a lot of the items from the house, from Jimmy's house. Someone from the museum actually went out and walked around the house and said, this would be nice. And Jimmy would say, well, how about this? Do you want this? So they have a lot of things, including the front door. When the house was torn down, they now have the front door to the Stewart house right there in the museum.
Huh. And the museum's now been there how long?
Yeah, it's well worth the trip.
The museum's
it's a little bit off the beaten path, but
How long's the museum been in operation now?
Oh boy, that might be a question you should ask my wife. I think 95.
Okay.
Somewhere in the mid 90s, yeah. But I'm not 100% sure. Yeah. We were there for the opening.
Is Indiana a small town? What's a good-sized town in Pennsylvania, Charlie? Can you describe
it's a small town. It's a college town. Indiana University of Pennsylvania is there. It's one of the state colleges. I'm not really too sure of the population. My wife and I grew up in a town here in Pennsylvania that was about 10,000, and I would say that's probably about the size of Indiana, 10 to 12,000 people. Very nice. It's a very nice town. Of course, they all love Jimmy. You can't walk down the street without seeing a picture of Jimmy Stewart somewhere in the windows. It's a good town. There is a Jimmy Stewart Boulevard in town, and as you go into town, depending which road you go in, great big sign. They consider themselves the Christmas tree capital of Pennsylvania. You'll see that, and it also has hometown of actor Jimmy Stewart. So they're very, very proud of Jimmy, and of course he was always proud of the town. He went back there quite a few times through the years.
Didn't Dad own a hardware store or something like that? And is that still around?
He did own a hardware store. Unfortunately, it was torn down. I'm not sure exactly when, not being from that area, but it's not there anymore. Mm. There is a very large, nice photo in the museum, takes up a whole wall, showing Jimmy in his Air Force uniform, sitting on a desk with his feet propped up on another desk, and the Oscar, his Oscar, sitting there. You know that story. He sent the Oscar back to his father, who put it in the front window of the hardware store for everybody to see. Yeah.
Was it hard to find photographs of Jimmy around a radio microphone? Was that a task for the book, or and have more popped up since the book been published?
Well, I did find quite a few photographs, and unfortunately the book got so big, I had to cut things out of it. And a lot of the photographs that I had didn't make it into the book. And a lot of the newspaper listings didn't make it into the book. And I had a whole chapter on his recording career, because he made quite a few records also through the years. That got cut out. But now they're all part of the blog. That was part of the reason for the blog, to get these things that I couldn't get into the book out there so people could see them and read about them.
Of the 300 shows that you and your wife compiled a list of, are there some that you guys wish you could hear a recording that we haven't found a recording of?
Oh, there are quite a few. Yeah, there are quite a few shows that I wish we had that we just never have been able to locate. He did a lot of shows in New York City. A lot of the smaller shows, Dorothy Kilgallen, Tex McCrary,
Tex and Jinx
yeah. Falkenberg, uh-huh. Yeah, a lot of their shows, and they just don't show up. And it would be wonderful to hear some of those, but I don't think it's probably going to happen.
In your blog, do you state which shows have not yet been found, so that in case somebody finds them, they can let you know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whenever I can, I always let them know. And, you know, there are things that are out there. Yeah, and there's a blog coming up early next month. There's a Death Valley 49ers. You guys out that way might know something about that.
Yeah, I know Mark. Yeah. Yeah.
I know about
Mark Graham working on a project about the 49ers, so I did not know that, no.
Well, yeah, Jimmy appeared on one of their shows, and they recorded the whole thing. And I have newspaper articles that say, you know, there's an album coming out with all this stuff on, and there's no album. I mean, I searched just about everywhere you can search and have not been able to find that album. That's one of those things that I hope somebody, you know, maybe still has the tapes sitting around that I might get a hold of one of these days. But, you know, there are all kinds of things like that out there. And he made publicity tours for most of his movies. And he did interviews in small towns, and some of those are still around, and some of them I've been able to get copies of. But probably for every one you find, there's probably 10, 15 that you don't even know about.
Sure.
Because they didn't make the newspaper listings or anything, so you don't even know he did them.
Did you look at the scripts? Maybe we didn't get the recording, but we might still have the script at the Library of Congress.
I have looked at scripts. We just spent some time in late May at Yale University. They have scripts for a lot of shows from the Theater Guild on the air.
Yes.
They have a lot of scripts, and we were up there, and we read them, and they actually allowed you to photograph the scripts. They wouldn't photocopy them for you, but if you had a camera, you could copy the pages. So I photographed every page, and they will be up on the blog. In fact, a couple of them are already up there. But, you know, wherever we could find scripts, yeah, we used them.
I'm glad to hear that, because I was looking for the Theater Guild archives over the year, and I knew it was at Yale, but I did not know what department. So I'm glad you were able to find the script part of the Theater Guild collection.
Yeah, it's amazing what they have up there. I think they may have just about every script from Theater Guild. I mean, if somebody's looking to do a book on the Theater Guild, that would be the first place to go. It's great. Wow.
With the It's a Wonderful Life, of all the movies he did, was that done the most time? Was there a second that was done, you know, 2-3 times over the years that was behind It's a Wonderful Life?
Oh, boy, you know, that was catching me off guard. I'm sure there was.
I know Magic Town was done a couple of times. And the Philadelphia Story was done a couple of times. Those are the ones I can think of. Maybe there are some others.
Well, I know he did call Northside 777 a few times on the radio.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's really about the only other movie I can think of that he did several times.
You know, here's a sidebar for the radio audience. I got Margaret Truman on the show one time. And the reason why I got Margaret Truman, I sent her a letter asking to do an interview, especially about her radio days, and I mentioned Jackpot that she did with Jimmy Stewart. And that's why she called me and said, "Walden, I totally forgot I did that. I'll be happy to do the interview." And so thanks to Jimmy Stewart, I was able to get to Margaret Truman.
Wow. And she forgot she did it.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's hard to believe. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I know Jimmy Stewart, when Dixie Crosby passed away in 1952, he did quite a bit of filling work for Bing.
Yeah, he did.
It was sort of like an MC position that
he
held on the show.
Right.
And then another special, I'm just thinking, if the thing he did for the cancer,
Society.
What was it? Around 1953.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what it was called. Something.
I think you're probably talking about The Traitor Within.
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah, yeah. That was done, but that was done on NBC, I think, for about cancer,
so,
a 30-minute show about cancer. Yeah.
And you think about at the time, my grandmother, they didn't talk about cancer. It was the big C, and so in a way, that was groundbreaking that they would even concentrate a whole radio drama based upon that topic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know you had a lot of, the Cancer Society was doing a lot of 30-second, 60-second spots on the radio, but that is one of the first shows, half-hour shows, I believe, that was ever done about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was the narrator, if I remember correctly.
Right.
Yes, he was.
Uh-huh.
Where were some of the places you and your wife went to find material? Was it the Library of Congress? Was it the Jimmy Stewart Museum? Were there any other places you guys went to find material?
We were at Penn State. The Penn State Library is in possession of all of the... I lost the name. Who am I thinking of? My wife just sat down here beside me.
Well, see, I know they have
Fred Waring.
Fred Waring, yes.
Yeah.
They were real nice and helpful up there. They had some scripts of the shows. They had the audio of the shows, which they were kind enough to put on CD for us. So we got those. And those were the three main places, I guess, that we hit, the two you mentioned and Penn State. I know there are some things out there on the West Coast, especially scripts, that we'd love to get to one of these days, but so far we haven't made it that far. Eventually, I hope we will.
How with the family, the daughters, when you said you've talked to the daughters over the years, what are some of the memories of the dad?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I think that's something you probably want to ask my wife.
Right. Okay, we can do that. Troy, what are some of the other books that you've written? We might as well give you a little plug. What you mentioned the Beatles. What other book can people look for you to pick
up? Well, actually, yeah, there were two Beatle books. One's called You Can't Do That, which, of course, was the title of one of their songs.
Right.
And it basically was about Beatle bootlegs. There were an awful lot of bootleg albums that were made of them. They appeared on the BBC a lot, and those things were never commercially put out. Of course, they are now, but they weren't in the 70s and 80s when these bootlegs came out. So it's basically about bootlegs and also novelty songs about the Beatles, you know, Ringo for President and, We Want the Beatles for Christmas and that kind of thing. So that was out. And the other one was at a time when all the list books were popular. It's a book of Beatle lists. And, they both did fairly well, and they're still around. You still see, of course, they're long out of print, but still see copies of them show up on eBay. The one thing, though, we get into an awful lot of used bookstores, an awful lot, and I think we've only ever seen one copy of either one of those in a used bookstore.
Oh. Wow.
So apparently the people who bought them kept them, which is nice.
Sure, sure.
So you think you might release it as an e-book someday? Have you had any thoughts about
e-books?
Doing an electronic version of it?
Well, I sure would like to see it, but I'm not sure. Bear Manor Media that published it, they do have a few e-books out, but not a lot. I don't think it's going to happen. I'd like to see it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Mm. Maybe we should talk to your wife.
Her name is Erna, E-R-N-A.
Thank you, Charlie.